Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of subpoenas, and good. I mean, we need to get these people into the hot seat, get them answering questions to get to the bottom. And like I said at the beginning, here the reality is we're heading in all the wrong directions when it comes to civil rights and to the right to protest. You look at all these laws that are being passed to declare what is a riot, what isn't, and, well, who it's going to be used against. I found no conservatives who will look at January 6th and go, yeah, that was an aggravated riot. All them keep telling me, no, it was just another day. We got problems on the horizon. Here to share some thoughts on all of it, I've asked my good friend Allison Gill to come talk with us. Dr. Gill is the host of the Mueller She Wrote podcast, also head of the MSW Media Group, the folks who put out great podcasts like ours. Allison, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Be here. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you taking some time for us. Let's start with the Rittenhouse trial today. I thought a great performance by the kid. Cried on cue when he was supposed to, stuck to the I didn't do anything wrong thing. But I'm looking at this going, this is all bad all the time.
I feel like he took a page out. Like, maybe he hired whoever coached Brett Kavanaugh before his confirmation hearing on how to be, because he really had that sort of, brewskis with squee kind of vibe going on for me today. I thought it was terrible acting, particularly the glance he gave over to the jury to see how they were reacting to his crying fit reminded me of when I was four.
Yep.
And
he
started
opened one
crying.
Eye.
And if there's no adult watching, it's like, oh, I'm fine. But what really struck me today was the judge in this case, and not just the Trump campaign song ringtone, but just the way that he was lashing out. And, you know, hey, give a tongue lashing to the prosecutor to stand up for defendants, for criminal defendants. I'm all for that. But in this particular case, it was just a little bit out of control.
Yeah. And the other part of it, responding as he's done throughout this trial to whatever's on CNN is just kind of bizarre to me. Like, if you don't like what Jeffrey Toobin says, don't watch. But to respond during the trial, like somehow that it's kind of weird and kind of, I think, one of those things that just flat wrong.
Yeah, no, I agree. Especially if your instructions to the jury and everyone else is to not pay attention to the media while you're on break.
Yeah, right.
It's like, set an example. At least walk the walk. But he just seemed to be so angry and impatient, to the point where I had to give kudos to the prosecuting attorney for keeping his cool and trying to explain over and over again. When he was trying to introduce this, he thought the door was open for a specific line of questioning, and why he thought the door was open. It seemed like that, the judge wasn't going to listen to anything, no rational argument. He'd made his mind up and he was just shouting at the top of his lungs. And then the defense wants a mistrial. I think the prosecution should ask for a mistrial.
No, you're right. But here's the moment that I'm in. And, outside of the whole trial thing, I've come to this reality that, in the future, maybe, we're in a world where we've all got to show up armed to any kind of protest, because what this trial, because I think he's going to get off. That's just my view. And I think the message out of here is, if something happens in one of these scenarios, shoot people and then become a hero to the right wing and make money off of it. But my view is, and I hope I'm wrong, that anytime there's a protest, anytime there's any of this stuff that goes on, you're going to have to shoot people. That's where it seems like we're heading.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I think Rittenhouse could probably successfully run for Congress, based just solely on this and that behavior, and be up there with the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world, shirking ethics rules by, not wearing a mask or refusing to go through the metal detector on the Hill, and joking on Twitter like Boebert and Matt Gaetz about blowing up the metal detectors inside the Capitol, and just having that all just sort of be just fine. Or, what was the recent video put up
Paul
by
Gosar.
Gozar, of the Hill People, trying to the anime of killing AOC, and they're going to censure him because they can't expel him because it'll take two-thirds, and no Republican Republicans are fine with this behavior.
And this is the unfortunate world that we're in. And look, as someone who is not a gun nut, it's making me wonder, is this one of those positions where the left better start arming itself, because this kind of stuff can happen at any moment.
Well, I put out a thread a while ago saying I this is my Glock 23. There are many like it, but this one is mine, right? And there's a photo of me shooting at Usury Pass in Phoenix, where you can shoot full on machine guns. And I just wrote this thread like this. It doesn't define me. It's not my religion. It is a tool. I keep it in a biometric safe. If I could get a biometric trigger for it, I would. If insurance were required on it, I would purchase it. I'm glad I had to pass a background check to get it. I would make anyone else pass one if they wanted to purchase it from me in a private sale. And it's not my life. Oh, and by the way, I don't need an AR-15 because I, unlike some people, can aim and shoot at what I'm trying to hit. And so I'm all for responsible gun ownership. I'm former military and dyed in the wool Democrat, but because of some things that I've gone through with in the past with abuse and domestic violence, I protect myself. But I don't carry it around to the subway to order a sandwich.
Yeah, and you don't take it with you to clean graffiti off of a wall, which is what we're led to
No.
believe this Rittenhouse kid was doing. He crossed state
Well,
lines with an AR-15 to clean graffiti off of a wall with an AR-15.
yeah, and when I go out to help people and render first aid, I always carry a firearm and wear body armor.
Yeah. Oh. We are just in screwy, screwy times. Speaking of screwy times, another set of subpoenas coming out. Of the January 6th commission, some interesting names, Kayleigh McEnany and Stephen Miller, jump out at me first and foremost. Curious your thoughts. Will they ever see the inside of a hearing room?
Probably not. And even if they did, they'd probably plead the fifth. The name that jumps out to me the most is John McEntee. This was the 29-year-old bro dude, I guess is the nice way to put it without using swear words, who ran the Presidential Personnel Office, the PPO. This is a group of kids who, maybe you heard the story when it came out, but they were icing each other, meaning they were hiding Smirnoff ices in the office, in the PPO office, and if you found it, you had to chug it, like in a government office. And he was the architect of the legal kind of subgroup, like the back channel legal group, the rogue legal group, because Pat Cipollone and some regular lawyers, still jerks, but regular lawyers at least, were like, no, Pence can't overthrow the election, Mr. Trump. So it was McEntee who put together this group of, Bosart Clark and Eastman and lawyers who were into this. And so he's kind of the architect of the architect, since John Eastman wrote the six-part memo on how to do it, and Clark participated. None of these guys are going to cooperate, though. And we need to see the steel bracelets on Bannon if any of them are going to take these subpoenas seriously. They
Yeah.
have until November 29th. My prediction is that the Department of Justice and the new DC U.S. attorney who just got there Friday, Matthew Graves, will indict Bannon likely prior to November 29th, when some of the other documents in that first round of subpoenas this week comes due.
Do we have any hope that we get to the bottom of any of this stuff, or is this just an exercise in futility that ends in virtually nothing come next year?
Well, I've never been a huge like proponent of the awesomeness of the committee. What I want is for the Department of Justice to criminally investigate this. And it seems like that is still an option, even though we haven't heard much about it, because all of these important depositions are happening behind closed doors. The documents that may be handed over from the National Archives tomorrow, or Friday, excuse me, if no court stops it, will be handed over and not released to the public. They will keep those under wraps. And that's a signal to me that they still may pursue this criminally in the DC US Attorney's Office. Again, the gentleman who just arrived. So, and we know the Inspector General of the Department of Justice is looking into it as well, and has probably already interviewed anybody in who's willing to talk.
Now, you broke the story of evidently the vice president on January 6th and the people surrounding him. Evidently, their ID cards didn't work the day of the insurrection. Why is that significant?
Well, you know, you may have heard John Carl on the Colbert Show talking about how the official White House photographer has photos of Pence and his group huddled on a loading dock in a parking garage with no desk, no chairs, no anything, watching the tweets from the president against Pence as it happened. And it's significant because the reason they were in a loading dock was because they didn't have access to their offices. Their badges worked that morning, and I'm talking about his aides, his senior staff, and himself, the vice president. Their badges were working that morning. They stopped working sometime between the morning and the time Pence was ushered off of the floor from certifying the votes. And then they were reinstated that night after the threat had passed, after the mob had dispersed. And the passes, the key cards were also not working at the White House, and they weren't working at the vice presidential office complex either. And that's according to sources who have talked to me on the condition of anonymity, because they are cooperating in ongoing investigations, plural investigations. Wow. So it's significant because if that were deliberate, we have to find out who did it. And now I'm just purely speculating, but that sounds to me like they were trying to prevent the vice president from being able to find safety.
Right. It sounds like they were, you know, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but you're stuck on a loading dock while someone's building a gallows screaming, "Hang Mike Pence." I don't know. That seems curious.
Yeah. You don't want him to be able to, because, and everyone else's badges worked. We know all those senators and members of Congress went to their offices, you know, and hid under desks and waited. Some hid on the floor in the upper chamber. And it's, you know, but to have your specific badges deactivated. And that, again, makes me question that McEntee fella, because he worked at the personnel office. He hires everybody. He might be issuing those key cards. I don't know. I don't know if it's them or the Secret Service, if it's him or the Secret Service. But it'll be interesting to find out. And from what I understand from my sources, it is being investigated. So we should find out.
So if this is accurate and all this is being investigated, you know, the fact that, you know, January 6th, you know, being a spontaneous, just another day, you know, just people a little exuberant, you know, kind of falls flat on its face, doesn't it?
Oh, well, totally. I mean, you know, when all else failed, they incited the insurrection. That was clear from the beginning. They tried to overturn, they tried to have Pence throw out electors, and Jeffrey Clark and Eastman put together that coup map, that architect for how to get Pence to do it. And when that failed, and when Pence refused to do it, they had, you know, people objecting in Congress. And when that didn't work, the president's like, let's march to the Capitol. And that's an unpermitted, that was an unpermitted rally. The rally at the Ellipse had a permit, but the marching to the Capitol did not, and the president knew it, at least Mark Meadows did, according to some testimony that we've heard. So, yeah, totally unplanned, spontaneous, didn't, you know, nobody, they just made shirts and everything, but it was just a lucky guess.
Yeah, they made shirts and everything, and recorded their treason. And this is where the weird thing for me is, you know, if you're Mike Pence, do you not, and look, I give him credit for not going along with the scheme that they had dreamt up, because, you know, he was a lackey all along during the time he was vice president. But isn't this a moment where you go, you know, I got to clear my name at some point and get out from under this stink?
It depends on how much you're compromised, I guess. I don't understand why people are going along with it, particularly Pence. I mean, his political career is already toast. Nobody that likes Trump likes him, and nobody else who doesn't like Trump likes him. Like, nobody likes this guy. So you have one thing you can do to get like at least five more people to like you, and that's to come out and tell the truth. And I feel the same way about was it Clark who refused to test, who showed up at least, but refused to say anything to the committee behind closed doors. And I said, I tweeted out he had the chance to be to the John Dean, and he chose to be the John Mitchell. And if you don't remember what happened to John Mitchell, he went to prison.
And that's what I'm hoping for at the end of this. I'm hoping a lot of perp walks happen. I'm hoping a lot of people end up in jail. And at some point we get to accurately write the history of how that all transpired and who's responsible. Because right now, my right-wing friends are all saying, no, it was a patriotic day. It wasn't an insurrection or a riot or anything. You're just blowing out of proportion. I'm going, no, people literally died. They wanted to overthrow our election process. I'm hoping at some point we get to the bottom of it.
I think history will paint a clearer picture, unfortunately. And what happens as far as seeking and finding justice and realizing justice, it's not ever going to be enough.
Right.
There'll be something, but it won't be enough. And I just hope everybody's prepared for it to not be
No,
enough.
just like the Mueller thing. Everyone was all ramped up about Mueller's coming, and I'm like, no, Mueller's not going to do anything, and we didn't see that. So, last question: in the coming days, what should we be paying attention to? What are you paying attention to?
Bannon's indictment. I'm looking for the new U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, who, like I said, Matthew Graves just got there last Friday after being slow walked for months and months of delays by Republicans in the Congress. Go, why would Republicans not want a new district attorney or a U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia? Oh, I look for that, and I look for things to start coming out of that office. The Bannon indictment I mentioned, perhaps they'll take a look finally at the Mueller obstruction of justice charges. It would be under his purview, and he just got there.
Good.
But who knows?
Well,
Well,
we'll
that's
see how
where I'm
this
going.
goes. Allison, I appreciate the time. Always great having you on. I appreciate the insight and the background. Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Great to see you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Allison Gill. Make sure you check out her Mueller She Wrote podcast over at the MSWmedia.com site. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.